You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, 1, 2. Look like a little country. Rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing the good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1, 2.
Welcome to Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features discussions with and the music of local musicians. I am your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with Jody Goble, composer in residence of the Savannah Voice Festival, about a concert which she has organized entitled Voices Around the World. This parlor concert is coming up a week from tonight on Wednesday, August 13th, beginning at 6:30 p.m. at the historic Green Meldrum House, 14 West Macon Street, where Savannah Voice Festival artists will take you around the world through song. The audience at this concert will enjoy a delicious array of wine, food, and song from around the globe. And in addition, you're going to be holding a masterclass for Voice Festival singers this Friday, August 8th at 1 p.m. in a free event at the First Baptist Church's choir room at 223 Bull Street here in Savannah. Welcome back to WRUU Radio and welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Jody Goble.
Thanks so much, Dave. It's great to be here.
Well, referred to the fact that you were on WRUU before, and that is almost exactly 2 years ago. And that was in August of 2023. And we were chatting on my show, Contemporary Classics, which featured an art song composed by you, My Song is Sung, with lyrics by Yo Noguchi. And that was for an album we were talking about by Laura Strickling, her 40 at 40 album.
That's right. That album is out now. And it's Grammy nominated last year.
Yeah. And the last time I saw you was actually here in Savannah. And that was in January at the world premiere of your opera, The Eleanors.
It was such a great week for me.
And it was a fabulous performance as well.
Thanks so much. It was a very special experience and a great experience to be in Savannah, not in August. It's lovely in January.
It amazes me the number of people who come down here in the middle of the summer from places like, well, north of where you are in Iowa, but from Minnesota and Michigan, because I'd rather be up there in August.
Right.
And I have to admit, before we get going into this discussion, that I do have a conflict of interest. And that is that my wife and I are actually the supporting sponsors of this concert.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Because, as you know, I'm a great lover of the art song.
Well, I remember that we had a conversation my first summer in Savannah after this very similar event at, I believe it was the Telfair Museum.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And we were talking about the nature of art song and the vast variety of art songs that exist in the world. I think most of our conversation was about the balance between standard repertory and then, you know, less well-known works, which is something the Savannah Voice Festival is always sort of trying to provide, that balance between things that are new and unfamiliar and things that are, of course, more standard rep. And that's going to happen again this summer. We are hoping to showcase the work of underrepresented composers and poets from around the world.
Listeners to my shows in the last month have thought that I am obsessed with the art song, because on Evening Eclectic, I've had two shows in the last month on art songs. One was a really interesting recording of African art songs.
Oh, wonderful.
And then also just a couple of weeks ago was a show featuring art songs based on the poetry of Paul Laurence Dunbar. And then in between those two, on Contemporary Classics, I did a show with Will Liverman. And that was about his new album, which the second volume of which was released just days before we did that show art songs that he wrote based upon the poetry of Paul Laurence Dunbar and his, for a short time, wife, Alice Dunbar Nelson.
Wonderful. That sounds like a great album. I'll have to check it out.
So let's talk a little bit about Jody Goebel.
Oh, dear.
Share with us your musical journey, but really sort of a musical journey focused on the art song.
Oh, sure. So I was trained as a violinist and a pianist from an early age. I started violin lessons when I was 4 and a piano a couple days after my 5th birthday. And I think that art song is something that most young pianists come to in college because they don't know it exists much until then. If it hadn't been music for me, it would have been some kind of creative writing because that's another interest of mine and another passion of mine. And to find this art form in which great literature is paired with a musical setting was sort of revelatory to me. And immediately I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. Also, I like collaborating with people musically. And to be a solo pianist really does mean committing yourself to many, many hours a day of solitary practice. And I would do that because it was expected of me, but sort of begrudgingly. And the more I met singers and realized that it was possible to build a musical life in which I was collaborative with other people and I could practice, but I could practice with other people and bounce ideas off a partner. It just became really increasingly apparent that that was going to be something that I preferred. There are plenty of collaborative pianists who specialize in chamber music and mostly play in piano quintets or piano trios or with wind players or brass players, but I have always been a singer's pianist.
And what are some of the challenges of being a collaborative pianist with singers?
It's an art form that the instrumentation of it makes it inherently very flexible. So, because the song itself has to be flexible, because you are trying, if you write an art song, to illuminate all of the important words in very specific ways, in order to be a good collaborative pianist who specializes in song, you have to be willing to do that. You have to be very aware of where the singer is breathing and which words are more important than others and how the musical setting serves that. So it feels, even when everything is written down, it can feel very improvisatory. And that's part of what makes it good and interesting. I would say that art songs, it's so interesting that you've done several programs on them because they're my favorite thing in the world. They're like a little universe, every single one of them. And because you're pairing literature, like poetry, that speaks to a time and a place and a culture, and you're pairing that with music that speaks to a time and a place and a culture, it's like a little microcosm of when it was written and who wrote it and what was happening to them and what they were thinking about. And I don't know, I love falling into those tiny little worlds one by one.
Well, and the thing I love about art song, and I always joke with the folks here who, oh, wonderful, we're going to have opera. And this year we're having two operas, actually. And, oh, I love to have the opera. I love to have the opera. And I say,
Oh,
really?
sure.
Opera's great. But it takes you 2.5 hours to tell a story. With an art song, you can tell a story in 2.5 minutes.
That's right. Yeah, it's a celebration of the miniature.
When I was talking to Will Liverman, I made that joke, and he said, yeah, and in an hour recital, you can listen to a whole bunch of different stories.
Yeah, it's sort of like reading a book of short stories instead of committing yourself to a novel.
Think this is true of opera as well, but the one thing I really love about the composition of art song is the way that the composer will accentuate the words or play with the words in terms of what they want to express with those words. I mean, all the way from a very almost staccato-ish singing of the words to accentuate every word, or to do that with accentuating particular syllables in a word, perhaps,
Sure.
or what's called melisma, which is when you sing one syllable over several notes to accentuate that word.
Right. And they're both very effective in different places. One of my favorite games to play, because I teach a class at Iowa State during the year, and in song literature, one semester for German song literature and another for French. And I like to play the game of bringing a poem back, but a different setting of that poem. Because in both of those bodies of repertoire, there are poems that come back again and again that, for some, whatever reason, the musical qualities of that text is just sort of catnip to composers. And so, especially in French art song, like some of the Paul Verlaine poems, there are more than 30 settings of them in kind of a 25-year period. And it's really rewarding and interesting to me and also to the students, I think, to listen to what different musical sensibilities make up the same text and how they choose to treat that text differently and how the same words can be a completely different feeling or emotion, or like it just brings something different out of the words.
And I'm sure Paul Laurence Dunbar is not unique in this habit, but much of his poetry speaks to song and speaks to singing. It just happened to hit me because of, again, doing a couple shows and going a deep dive into the music written for the poetry of Paul Laurence Dunbar, that the number of poems he's written that really delve into the joy of singing and the joy of sharing something through song.
And again, he's speaking to a very like specific cultural and social moment for him. I really like writing songs to poetry that reference singing because it frees you up in a very specific and unique way to do singerly things like the melisma that you mentioned.
Well, and in fact, the song we talked about a couple years ago was My Song Is Sung.
The Noguchi songs that I set that year, I set them all during the pandemic. And it turned out after the fact, when I looked back at the six of them, that they were all sort of this love letter to live music. Noguchi had this belief that he wrote about music as if it was embodied, an entity that kind of hung around in the air. And so those were really rewarding songs to write. And you'll have to talk to Laura about what's next for those, but we have grand plans in the next 6 months or so for that whole set.
Tonight on Savannah Music, Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with Jody Goebel, composer in residence of the Savannah Voice Festival. So let's start talking about the songs that you're going to include in this particular program that you have coming up. You say that you wanted to tap into songs that spoke from a perspective that is different than many art songs. So my guess is there won't be any Schubert or Schumann.
I think it's going to be a mixed bag. The program is only partially chosen because it's being compiled right now from a body of repertoire that the singers themselves are bringing to the table. And we're sort of winnowing down and choosing from what they may already know and then a few new things as well. But one of the things I like the most about art songs as well is we get a more complete idea of who was writing music at any given point in time than you might get if you look at the same period of symphonies or opera, because songs are cheap. It's one singer and a pianist, or a singer and another kind of instrument, or sometimes just singer alone. And so it's a very inclusive art form for composers who did not have the public forum or didn't have the resources to see a bigger work performed. It's expensive, and it always has been, to mount a symphony. It's expensive, and it always has been, to mount an opera. I love the author Terry Pratchett, who wrote social satire disguised as fantasy in the UK for many years. He has a line about opera. Opera doesn't make money, it's what you put money into. But art song isn't like that. As long as you have a piano and a living room and a singer, you can put an art song together. So we do have in the repertory far more, I think, than any other subcategory of classical music. We have composers of color, we have women composers, we have composers who didn't have a lot of money, who didn't have patronage. So it's very egalitarian in that sense compared to some other art forms. And it makes for enormously interesting programming.
I think you get a kick out of a little refrigerator magnet that I have. It's a quote
Yeah.
from Moliere, and it is, "Opera is the most expensive noise."
Oh, yeah. It's very expensive. I'm team opera too. I love the immediacy of those stories. The most successful operas feel conversational to me, and it's a story playing out in real time. But a song is a little snapshot.
Well, and also at Iowa State, if I'm not mistaken, you're involved in opera production as well.
Yes, the Savannah Voice Festival audiences are going to be really familiar with baritone and director Chad Sonka, who is my partner in crime at Iowa State. We team teach opera studio together. And he's at voice faculty, and so am I. So, yes, we do an operatic project every semester. But I also play somewhere from 8 to 12 song recitals a year as well. So, it's possible to do both, and they kind of feed a different part of your soul.
It's interesting to note too that, again, I was talking to Will Liverman, and it was really funny because he said, until I got to graduate school, I didn't appreciate art song. I couldn't see the point because I just wanted to do opera.
Well, it's very true that the path a singing career usually has something to do with opera. Not always, but usually it's a path that is well defined in terms of you do an undergrad degree, you do a graduate degree, and then you move on to a young artist program, and then maybe a residency, and then maybe you get an agent. You can see the road, and I think that when you're in your 20s, it's very comforting to be able to see the road. Building a singing career on art song is more like taking a machete and walking into the wilderness. I think because you've spoken to Laura, you probably have heard her say something like that. You are constantly forging your own path and finding like alternate routes to things because it just isn't as well mapped out. I do find that when I work with young people, sometimes they are very opera-centric. They are interested in opera because they know how it will serve them in the future to learn it. I work only with undergrads at Iowa State, and many of them aren't quite thinking that far ahead yet. And so it's very rewarding to, I hope, like instill a love for art song in singers of that age, because even if you go away from it for a little while and you focus on opera after you get out of undergrad, I believe you'll find your way back because it just speaks to the human condition. There's a song for everyone out there that when you hear it, you'll be like, oh, that person is thinking and feeling the exact same way that I am thinking and feeling right now, or that I have in the past. It's an excellent way to feel emotionally seen.
Well, and you said that you have, or you play in something like 7 or 8 art song recitals a year.
Yes, or more. The repertory is vast. It's so vast that you'll never go to the end of it. You could play a different hour-long program of art songs every day of your life and never reach the end of the ocean. It's that deep and that wide, which is an amazing challenge, and I refuse to be overwhelmed by it. I just kind of jump in every day and see where I get to swim.
Well, there's the Brooklyn Art Song Society, or BASS, and they
Yes.
have a series of concerts which in any year goes from the Renaissance to things that were composed yesterday.
Right? There are so many things in the US right now, and probably outside the US as well, but the United States is where I know a little bit more about what's going on. Places who are doing great things with art song. So, Brooklyn Art Song Society is one of them. In Boston, there's Calliope's Call. Cincinnati Song Initiative does great things. There's a kind of a movement that pops up in different cities called the Song Slam, where people show up and compete. They present a song and there's a little competition. There are wonderful things that are happening with art song.
Well, and of course, as we've been talking about, the Savannah Voice Festival also does wonderful things with art song as part of
Yes.
its celebration of voice.
Yes. I think not to include art song in a voice festival would be a mistake.
Yes, I agree 100% with that because it is such a uniquely different genre that I think people, if they're not familiar with it, should become familiar with it because it's just such a wonderful milieu that you can build from. And the skill level of different art songs are just amazing. I mean, there's a Litz set of art songs that are just seemingly impossible to sing.
Oh, are you talking about the Victor Hugo poems?
Yeah.
Yeah. Au Cange d'Or, and yeah, that's a beautiful set, and they're very difficult to sing. They're as difficult as any aria. And then there are art songs that are very simple or seemingly very simple. And I think that one of the wonderful things about it is the concepts that are in the poetry also range from very, very simple and universal to very complex and specific. So there's a key for every lock and there's a setting for every poem.
I think that's very interesting about art song is the length of the poem.
Oh,
Because the
yeah.
fact that you can have poems that are 2 or 3 lines, but by the creative use of melody and the creative use of harmony, you can make that 2 or 3 line poem into a 2, 3 minute song.
Right, and so profound. I think one of the things that's so wonderful about a musical setting of a poem is that the composer is at liberty to repeat anything that they feel is important. And that gives the audience time to live with those words in the way that maybe if you're reading that poem on the page, you read the words and you see them once. But if you listen to the song, you hear that line that the composer felt was meaningful or moving or touched them in some way. You can hear that line 3 or 4 times, maybe, or part of it. And it just lets you live in that universe a little longer. speaking as someone who writes musical settings of poems, the length of the poem is definitely a consideration when I'm looking for a new poem, because you know that a long poem is going to be a very long song.
Again, I hate to perseverate, but it is a recent conversation, and that's again with Will Liverman. He has one song on it that runs about 7 minutes. And he says, that was a risk, I think. But the poem's quite long, but that was a risk because, with people with their short attention span these days.
With 7 minutes, you almost start to go into monodrama territory just a little bit, because that's long enough with that character that it feels like a standalone thing. But sometimes a long song, really wonderful.
The other thing I really love about art song is again the creativity of the composer and how they will, as you mentioned, repeat words for emphasis, but repeat words in so many different ways. Again, I'm thinking of a Paul Laurence Dunbar poem called Good Night. And one composer, for instance, did this really interesting thing of repeating the good night, but quieter and quieter and quieter as they finish, so that you are sort of drawn into that feeling, the good night.
It just sort of trails off into the ether.
Yeah.
In my song literature class, I tend to move chronologically. So in the German semester, for example, I start with a very, very brief discussion of Minnelieder, sort of the medieval underpinnings of what eventually becomes art song. And then we move through Corona Schroeder and Mozart and Haydn. And then by the time we get to Schubert, we see what the art song is going to become. But they start out very simply. And so much of the pressure in those early songs is on the performer, because each verse is set the same musically. And even Schubert does this. In fact, sometimes as late as Brahms. Brahms will do a strophic song where you have three or four verses of text and you have the same musical setting. And it's funny how every time I teach this class, the students will start to discount a strophic song as not being as good as a through-composed song or a binary song. Like, no, it's not that. It's just the more of the onus is on you to make this what it needs to be. It's a ballad, it's a story that you're telling, and you have to be very specific about how you tell it. But it's also true that the longer that the tradition goes on, the more composers get very inventive about the ways that they change the setting. And that makes it easier for the singer, of course, and maybe more interesting for the audience as well. I go back and forth. I appreciate both.
Again, if you look at the history of the art song, as you said very early on, the texts were very simple and there probably were not any markings in terms of volume, in terms of vocal ornaments you could do.
That's right.
But when you get to Schubert, you have much more marking and much more indication of what he had in mind for the song.
Right. It's interesting to look at those early songs in any language and realize how much of the interpretive decisions are made or by the performer. And the composer was fine with that. They only wrote down what they thought they needed to write down. And it's very, like, any score from that time period is shorthand. They only wrote what they thought wasn't evident already by the style. So you have to learn the style as well as what's on the page.
Yeah, I always joke that what most people don't realize is that up through the Baroque period, that they were really jazz, they were really jazz of the 1600s, 1700s, because it was basically charts that they were singing from.
One of the scariest experiences of my life musically was arriving for a Messiah gig and realizing that the only score they had to give me was figured bass. I got through it, me and the harpsichord. But you get one note of a pitch and it's your bass line, and then the little numbers underneath it that tell you what inversion everything is in, or if you need to add any pitches to the harmony. And That is a skill that I admire in other people who do it really, really well.
This is WRUULP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
This portion of WRUU's programming is brought to you by listeners and by the 2025 Savannah Voice Festival. Season 13 of the Savannah Voice Festival is themed Once Upon a Time and includes opera, art song, musical theater, classical cabaret, and popular song. It is everything voice from August 7th to the 17th at venues around Savannah and Chatham County. More information and tickets can be found at www.savannahvoicefestival.org. The Spectre Choir is hosting Held in Harmony, a one-day All Voices Welcome choral retreat on August 16th, filled with joy, connection, and music making. This inclusive event features holistic breath and body work, a group voice lesson, and a chance to learn, perform, and record a custom choral arrangement created just for the day. More information and registration can be found at www.spectrachoir.com.
This music is often called classical music, but remember, Mozart, Beethoven, and Liszt were the rock stars of their time, so I simply call it great music. I'm your host, Dave Lake, and join me for four centuries of great music, with new episodes each week on Sundays from 3 to 5 p.m. We also have encores of these episodes on Saturdays from 3 to 5 p.m. from mid-June to early December.
Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with Jody Goble, composer in residence of the Savannah Voice Festival, about a concert which she has organized entitled Voices Around the World. This parlor concert is coming up a week from tonight on Wednesday, August 13th, beginning at 6:30 p.m. at the historic Green Meldrum House, 14 West Macon Street, where Savannah Voice Festival artists will take you around the world through song. The audience at this concert will enjoy a delicious array of wine, food, and song from around the globe. And in addition, you're going to be holding a masterclass for Voice Festival singers this Friday, August 8th at 1 p.m. in a free event at the First Baptist Church's choir room at 223 Bull Street here in Savannah. And so one of the things that you're going to be doing with this concert coming up is to explore, again, a wide variety of different sources of the art song and from around the world.
Yes.
But as you mentioned, a lot of that is in the process because of the fact that you're going to the people who will be involved in this concert itself and having them come up with some of the examples. But do you have some examples already that have been determined?
Everything is sort of up in the air because people are getting back to me. But I can say that all of the singers who are singing on that concert are bringing repertoire from their own experience. We have a Chinese soprano on that concert who I very much hope will sing some Chinese art songs. Chad Sonka is going to sing on that concert. And we are pairing a Florence Price song called Forever with one of my songs called One More Song, which is a Vachel Lindsay text.
I'm not known before.
There are a few things that we know for sure, and then the rest is a delightful mystery. It's one of my pleasures in life is to look at a list of things and make a program out of it that will be varied and interesting, and I feel speak to a lot of different people who will see it and also speak to the performers who are singing it, because that's the other thing about art song. It is music that is absolutely written for the performers as much as it is written for the audience. So if you're not having a good time singing it, you're not singing the right thing.
Again, we mentioned this before, it's the interaction between the poetry and the composition that goes with the poetry. This almost sounds like I'm talking to a singer-songwriter, in a sense. But do you have a melody in mind, and then you look for poems that sort of fit that melody? Or do
Never.
You always go for the poetry and then work to the melodies into the poetry?
Different people do different things, of course. What I do is I find the text that speaks to me, and then I let the text suggest a melodic contour. The word always comes first for me. And then as I live with the word, then the tune becomes apparent. It kind of swims up to the surface. But setting text is different than writing a line for a flutist or a clarinetist, you know, because it does have to do so much with words. And we make so many value judgments about words that we aren't aware we're doing, because we learned language when we were 1 and a half. Language is just inherent to us. But things that are more important within the language take more time. Stressed syllables take more time, or they're higher pitched. Like just now I said the word pitched a little higher because I was headed toward it, right? So there's duration, there's pitch, and then there's also within music, where do you put the important thing? And if you're a good composer of text, it usually goes on something that is more like higher in the hierarchy in terms of like beat placement. So in a bar of four, one is the most important thing usually, and three is next important, and two and four are a little less important, and then the offbeats of those beats are less important still, just in terms of the way we inherently hear meter. So you want to put the strong syllable on something that's already strong, unless you're working the word against itself to suggest that what the poet is saying is something they don't really mean. So you can get sarcasm in, you can get unreliable narrator in the way that you set a text. But I always go with the word first, but that's just me.
Well, that's very interesting what you just said, is that you can put like emotion, you can put intent into the text by the way that you orchestrate it.
Mm-hmm. I think all the great songwriters or all the great setters of song do that. And it sounds different in different languages. Like, so German and English function in many ways very similarly in terms of the way that beat structure and hierarchy work.
Ich wollte sprechen, da sagt es hart.
But French is completely different because a French phrase, any given French word, doesn't have a strong syllable accent. And when you string a phrase of French together, there's really only one point of stress, and it's at the end of the phrase, or it's the next to last syllable, the right? So it either goes to the end or the next to last thing, the penultimate thing. So that's why French feels so legato when you hear it sung. And it's so much about like where the phrase goes as it nears its end.
Pose, oh, chien, oh.
English and Italian and German are different.
So, although Italian, Spanish, and French are, quote, the Romance languages, they are very different in terms of writing for them.
Yeah. And because of the way our ear processes those languages, they hit us in different emotional ways as well.
And you mentioned that English and German are quite similar in terms of the way that you write for them.
Yeah, I think it's Goethe's fault. And maybe he got it from Shakespeare. I don't know. It's like, it's all iambic pentameter, right? That's how our language functions. And if you want to keep that, there are different ways to treat it. But we hear songs where the speech-like rhythm of the words is very apparent. And we also hear songs where the composer has taken a lot of liberty with those rhythms and kind of worked them against themselves. And they can both be effective.
And what you're doing with this program that's coming up, I think is very important, and that is exposing people to poetry they're maybe not used to. I was talking to another person who deals a lot with poems, particularly African-American poets and African-American composers who are writing the music for the various poetry. And he made the comment that, you know, as a musician, the only reason I know Goethe is the art songs that were made from his poetry. I wouldn't have known Goethe other than that.
Right.
And so it's so very important for art song writers to expose people to these different poets.
Right. Well, and Goethe was a literary giant in his time, the novels alone, not to mention the poems. But then think of all the lesser known poets who are immortalized by music. Just to stay in the German paradigm for a second, I think about Wilhelm Müller, who wrote the texts for Winterreise and Die Schöne Müllerin. Those are Schubert's last two major song cycles and some of his best work. And Müller was an indifferent poet. We wouldn't know his name today if Schubert hadn't set those two cycles of poetry to music.
Schönen Liedes aus, da das Ach, die schon in meinem Wahn, sie pfiff den armen Flüchtling aus. Er hätte es ihr bemerken sollen, des Hauses aufgestelltes Schild, so hätte er wieder suchen wollen, im Haus ein treues Frauenbild. Der Wind spielt drinnen mit den Herzen, die auf dem Dach nur nicht so laut. Was fragen Sie nach meinen Schmerzen? Ihr Kind ist eine reiche Braut. Der Wind spielt drinnen mit den Herzen, die auf dem Dach nur nicht so laut. Was fragen Sie nach meinen Schmerzen? Was fragen Sie nach meinen Schmerzen?
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I've been talking with Jody Goebel, composer in residence of the Savannah Voice Festival, about a concert that she has organized entitled Voices Around the World, which is coming up a week from tonight on Wednesday, August 13th, beginning at 6:30 p.m. at the historic Green Meldrum House, which is at 14 West Macon Street, where various Savannah Voice Festival artists will be taking you on a journey around the world through song. And it's going to be a journey that is going to be unique for every vocalist who is appearing in the program, because they're bringing this music to the program, as we've heard during tonight's show. And also, Jody is going to be holding a voice masterclass for singers this Friday, August 8th at 1 p.m. And that is a free event at the First Baptist Church Choir Room at 223 Bull Street. And I want to thank you so very much, Jody, for being the composer in residence of the Savannah Voice Festival, as well as being on the show tonight.
Thanks so much, Dave. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Lake. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, it ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.